chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the martyr walk the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond. How are you doing today? What a weekend, huh? Before we get going with tonight's topic, I want to say, and I think I forgot to say this last weekend, the song that I've been playing coming into Mouthful since we ended our hiatus last week is Petaluma by singer-songwriter Norman Greenbaum. And it's a great song. It's about Petaluma, but also I wanted to give an update about Norman, who's in a really quite severe car accident about 3 weeks ago. And they, friends of Norman set up a Facebook page with frequent updates on his condition, and he is going to be just fine. He broke an eye socket, or shattered an eye socket, and also broke his jaw in one place, and some other injuries, but no brain problems. He's going to be fine. They've kept him in an induced coma because they wanted some healing. They wanted his body to heal somewhat before they took him into surgery to prepare to repair the broken facial bones. So I just thought we would honor Norman for a while until I get our new intro and our new outro created. I'm working on this right now. And we just want to say, Norman, we love you. We love your songs about Petaluma and Sonoma County and everywhere. And we hope that you are going to be out of the hospital and having a good time really soon. On that note, it's Mouthful, our second show after our four-month hiatus. It's great to be back. We are at a new time, obviously, 6 to 7 instead of 7 to 8. That lets you get on with Sunday dinner and whatever else you might be doing to get ready for the week ahead a little bit earlier. Let's make it home a little bit earlier to feed the puppies and that sort of thing. And tonight we're going to be talking in part about the brand new, still crying at night, Roanoke Park Certified Farmers Market, which kicked off today, and a number of other farmers markets throughout Sonoma County that come under the umbrella of agricultural community events. And on that note, I would like to welcome Kelly Smith, who I'm meeting for the first time after talking many times on the phone, and also Jim. Do you prefer Jim or James?
Jim is fine.
Jim Fenston. How did the market launch go today?
We felt it went really well. We had a nice range of farmers market produce, garden starts, really nice and full. Everything you need to fill your pantry, your refrigerator, and then some. So it was a beautiful market. We were really pleased.
And how was attendance?
We felt the attendance was good. You know, people are still learning about it.
Sure, absolutely.
The city of Roanoke Park did put a lot of effort into getting the word out, but you know we all work a million hours and we have a lot of input, so it's great to be on the show to let people know that it's happening and it's you know a lot of our local producers, agriculturers out there to come out and support them and mm-hmm. see what real fresh produce is like if mm-hmm. you haven't experienced it before. And those who love it, you know, come and join us. So
it's nice that, you know, because we've had Petaluma, of course, for a long time, mm-hmm. and we have Santa Rosa and Sebastopol, but for Roanoke Park to have a daytime year-round market, I just think it's really great.
And the response from the customers who came today were really ecstatic. Mm-hmm. We've had some great Facebook posts where you can see what people bought. And they're really pleased, and the city's really pleased as well to be able to offer that to their residents. Mm-hmm.
Great. So now let's go back in history to the formation of agricultural community events. Has that always been sort of your umbrella?
It's something that Jim and I created along with an additional person that is no longer with us. He moved away to be with his family. But we formed it there were various reasons, our love for farmers markets. We started a small little community market in Marinwood.
That was the first one.
Our first one, and it was really about rehabbing a piece of property that Jim and I both were raised in Marin County, and this particular piece of property had been neglected and dumped upon. And
mm-hmm. And it's off Lucas Valley Road, right?
Right. Right off 101, you see the Marinwood Avenue exit, and you go, what the heck is that place? Well, it's a farmer's market in a sweet community, and we've helped. They now have a grocery store. They didn't have any, you know, local food. Mm-hmm. And I think we live in an area where we really appreciate that we can bike and walk places.
Yes.
So it was done out of heart and love for our communities. Mm-hmm. And our love for farmers markets. And that evolved each year. We've added a new market, mm-hmm. or several.
Now, what year did that one, did Marinwood start?
It was 5 years ago, so 2010.
Oh, gosh, that's all?
Yeah, that's
wow.
All.
It just seems longer.
It does. Well, it's on Saturday, right?
It is.
For a long time, I've driven to a Saturday class out Lucas Valley Road. And I always pass the sign that says Marinwood Farmers Market. And it seems like it's been longer ago than 5 years.
Yeah, it's been 5 years. We had a great support from the local supervisor, Susan Adams, who just recently left office. But, it's an interesting piece of property out there that it still needs help. They're working on affordable housing.
Right. There's George Lucas is doing a 300 unit affordable housing
on Grady up the road of Lucas Valley, which I think is fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's very much needed in Marin County.
Yes,
definitely. It's a heated topic. And
yes.
It's a cute small market. So when people come to Marinwood, they knowing that we also run 11 additional markets.
It's 11 other markets.
Yeah, so 12 total between Sonoma and Marin County. They go, it's just a sweet market. It's really about, and I think that the reason for our success is that we look at the community and we support our farmers and our vendors, and we make it really about the farmers market.
Mm-hmm. Let's go through the list of 12. So the first one is the Marinwood.
Mm-hmm.
What came next?
Glen Ellen, which is now Kenwood. We moved over to Kenwood last year. And then after that came Petaluma Eastside, which is a fantastic market. If you haven't been to Pelham Eastside, it is a marvelous Tuesday morning, kind of odd hours, but it's great for the vendors. And if you can get a little time aside on a Tuesday morning, 10 to 1:30.
And it's Lucchese Park, right?
Lucchese Park, yeah. And then from Pelham Eastside, we went into Novato and Fairfax, where long-term markets that were no longer going to be operated by AIM, which runs the Marin Civic Center market. Mm-hmm. They wanted to focus their efforts on year-round markets and not seasonal markets. Mm-hmm. So we put in proposals for both of those markets and won them both. We didn't expect that to happen. From those two markets, did we lead into the vet? Santa Rosa Vets.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that because we knew it was a icon for Sonoma County.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, our love for farmers markets, and to see, the political split that had happened that went out publicly.
That was really brutal.
Yeah. And I think we've put a lot of tender, loving care and helping healing that hurt.
Yeah, well, it seems, I was just thinking about this yesterday, it seems now that it is, what happened is fading.
It's fading from,
we don't even have to rehash it here.
No.
So we just want it to go away from people's memories. No, it was a sad time and it's over.
And
those that were there are losing the pain, and there's a whole new generation coming.
Right.
And we encourage that. We're really about it. We're all in it together. It shouldn't, you know, we're not in a, we're in a competitive world, but the competition should be really friendly and
absolutely
exciting. And it's about, like, to grow something and produce something is so magical. And we really need to focus on that, the really positive
things
we're all putting it out there.
And it's a good location.
It's a great location.
You know, especially for the people in, you know, the people who can bike and walk there. It's perfect.
Well, and part of the reason why we formed the organization is that Jim is a brilliant market manager. He is amazing at putting together a market, seeing where there's needs, seeing whether it's a consumer need, a vendor need, and making everybody feel so welcome. He is so hospitable. We always say that about him. He's always
Well, I used to run the Civic Center Market for about 7 or 8 years.
Oh, and that's a, that's the biggest market in the North Bay.
Yeah, so going to the Vets, the giant parking lot, is really gets your juices flowing as someone who designs markets. And we're now back to two rows, and it's a complete circle, and it's really taken off since January. I mean, quite remarkably. So it's a lot of fun for me as a, as an old time market manager to go out there and design a big one like that. And the parking lot is just wide open, and you can do anything you want.
Cool. So we're up to Santa Rosa Community Market, so we've got six more to go.
Then Katati came to us, the chamber, and said, would you like to run our market? And we said, sure. Sure, why not? What's another market? And then that was 2014, and then
and that was a good year in Katati. We actually had a lot of fun. It's a cute little market.
We moved that market because everybody was in the street, and they had that great bandstand.
Right.
So it was like, why isn't everybody facing the music and enjoying the music?
Oh, so how did you restructure it?
We put everybody into the park. The
great
thing about the location is, and for farmers markets, people want to bring their families and have your children run wild and have that freedom. And so by being in the park, you have that safety. You don't have to worry about the traffic. You don't, you can sit on the grass, enjoy a dinner, pick up some produce before you leave. You know, the chamber sells beer and wine, so you can have a glass of wine, have a glass of beer, and just enjoy your community. So that was, I think, what is bringing the success into that market, because we do have a lot of interest in vendors returning and bringing in additional vendors. So that's always exciting when you, you know, it's when people don't want to come back, when you know you need to do something.
Yeah, definitely.
So from Katati, then we come to the end of 2014, and we heard Runner Park was up for, they opened it up for requests for proposal, and the vendors have come to us, and they'll say, you know, Runner Park is, it needs a manager. You better put your, get in there. So they're rooting for us and giving us the information and asking us to do this. So we put in for Runner Park and got approval for that. And then with, we're also, so that's Sunday and Friday. That's two. And then with the last two would be the Petaluma Markets, the Wednesday evening.
Oh, so you're, okay, they're under
the,
your umbrella.
In the Walnut Park. The previous manager, Erica, really wanted to retire.
Right.
And then Alex was running it with her, and Alex decided to go and help her family restaurant. They have Sol's Pizzeria in Katati, and she wanted to be with her family. And as Jim and I both know, that it's hard to make family time with all the work that we do with markets. So you kind of have to incorporate your family into the market. So that's all of them. That's all 12. I think we covered them all.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. I was trying to count, and I missed the two Petaluma markets, and I counted Runnett Park as one. So there was my mistake.
Right, and some I think I count Santa Rosa's too as well. Wednesday and Saturday.
Okay, okay. So. You know, one thing people say, and this is something that a lot of people said during the political trouble at the Santa Rosa market, you'd hear a lot about, well, what does a market manager do? All they have to do is collect money. What's so hard about that? And because I've written about farmers markets for so long, I know that it's so much more than that. But I want to hear from you. What does it take? What does it look like to manage a single market? Let's go from there to, let's start with just managing one single market. What's involved in that?
Well, I mean, Tuesday, say for Saturday, okay. Veterans, on Tuesday, you need to, assess what you did the previous weekend and see, who's coming, who's going. And then, you need to make adjustments because, with a farmer's market being organized in a certified and a non-certified section.
No, we should tell people what that means. We know, but let's tell people what that means.
All the farmers have to be certified by the Ag Department. And
certified is actually growing what
which
they
means,
claim that they grow.
Yeah, they mix that with organic. It's you have to be certified first to verify that you grow what you sell, and then you can get further certifications for organic and such.
Mm-hmm.
So all these vendors have to be in their own section, and they can't be intertwined with any other vendors. No art, no food. And so with the vets, we have them all in the center. And so it's absolutely crucial that I have the other vendors surround the farmers so there's no gaping holes. And people need to stay within the circle so they can see the whole market, not get distracted and leave and such. So we got to make sure that whole circle is complete. And so that's done on Tuesday and Wednesday.
And by making sure that it's complete, one of the things I assume you mean is you're calling farmers. Mm-hmm. Are you coming this Saturday?
Yeah.
Do you have anything? You're not sick, all that sort of
and
thing.
And then we need to surround the farmers with a full row. I need to have artists, and I need to have face painters, and I need to have children's activities. Mm-hmm. Make sure the jumpy is coming.
Lunch food and
then
breakfast.
All
food.
The hot food needs to show. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they go off to other events, so we mm-hmm. need to see if we can fill in.
And then coffee. We all need coffee to start our day.
And the bakeries.
Yeah, and then as Jim's saying, is that you also have to verify that if you're getting a new vendor, that they have that certification through mm-hmm. the agricultural department that they grew what they say that they're bringing.
Mm-hmm.
And so verifying that if there's...
And then the food.
Needs to have a health permit. You need to verify that. You also have to pay the bills. You may be receiving money, but you also have to put that money out there and advertise.
So your expenses are rent for your location,
mm-hmm.
Advertising,
staff. Travel, accounting, banking,
social media.
Yeah,
I do.
The list
on Thursday, I'll do a 2-hour. I do an email that I send out to 300 of my best customers, and we'll spend 2 hours on it and try and describe mm-hmm. what we're doing at the market.
Uh-huh.
So that's a big thing for me, and
sure.
It's kind of my own little food blog, and it's a lot of fun. And then, Friday, you gear it all up and you solidify it. And then I get up at 4:30 and get out there at 6 and I chalk it all out. Everyone has their own customized spot.
Uh-huh.
And then I sit there and I just wait for the cars to pull in. And I meet them at the gate and I take them to their spot like a maitre d' until it's all filled in.
Now, do you provide the tables or do they?
We actually, most people bring their own equipment. But
okay.
We at the vet, we are lucky. They do give us tons of tables and chairs uh-huh. and anything we need. So
uh-huh.
they're very generous in that way.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
It's great if we have partnerships with the locations mm-hmm. where they're very supportive of supporting the event. So I often say running a farmer's market can be like having a party, and you have to make sure that you have enough food for everybody and seating and entertainment, and then hopefully everybody shows up.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's a good party. If not, you reassess and you plan better for next week.
Mm-hmm.
And it, to put basically a grocery store together for 5 hours, and it takes all week long to prepare that. And
mm-hmm.
by doing so many markets, it does help concentrate those efforts into 12 different locations. So if one location doesn't work for a vendor, maybe another one does.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a small grower gets lost at a big market, so maybe providing them a market that is much smaller where they can get more focus on them.
Mm-hmm.
Then, so we really work with the vendors to make sure that they are getting the sales that they need. And if they're not, can we help in any way? And that can be signage. We've been known to order signage for our vendors, help them with tablecloths, help them getting new canopies or providing canopies until they can get, you know, there's a windstorm, breaks their canopy. We'll pull out something from somewhere and make it happen for them. Mm-hmm. Because all of these businesses are so small.
Yeah.
They are, one day, one bad day could break some of them.
Absolutely.
So it is, we're looking at sustainability and we're looking at longevity.
Mm-hmm.
We're not in it for the one day fee because that does us no good.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not that much.
No, it's not. You know, it ranges between $10 to $30.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, it's not that much, especially when you look at the expenses going out.
Sure. Yeah. We're going to take a little musical break here on Mouthful, and we will be right back with more talk about the agricultural community events, farmers markets.
It's going to take a minute because it went to sleep.
We have new equipment here. We'll get there momentarily.
And we'll be right back. And this one is, come all you, number one.
I was at the farmer's market, my local farmer's market, last Sunday, and several vendors, because, you know, right now it seems we're at, what's the word, we're at cross seasons. First of all, we have crazy weather, very crazy weather. We have lots and lots of winter greens coinciding with some of the first fava beans, some of the first, oh gosh,
Asparagus.
Sugar snap peas, that sort of thing. And several vendors were selling charred collard greens, several different types of kale, anything green, you know, wrapped in a bunch for $2 a bunch.
Right.
Which is, you know, it's really inexpensive.
Very inexpensive.
And
for the reality of the cost of growing it.
Yeah, and plus, even if you go to a grocery store, it's going to be a lot more, and you're not going to know where it's from.
Right.
But one of the things I like to tell people, because people do get overwhelmed, especially, like, if you're not used to cooking collard greens, you're not sure what to do with them. If you're not used to cooking dinosaur kale, it's like, what?
Right.
One of the things I've done for a while in my one of my columns is, hey, cook on Sunday. You know, if you get lost in being really busy during the week, there's a number of things you can do. You can buy a stewing hen, for example, or you can just buy a chicken and you poach it on Sunday while you're doing something else. The way I poach a chicken, it takes an hour. You take that the poached chicken out of the water. What I do, just real quickly, to poach a chicken, put a chicken in. I add whatever aromatics I happen to have. I cover it with water. I bring it to a boil. I put a lid on it and I turn the heat off. And you just turn it off. If it's a little chicken, 40 to 45 minutes. If it's a bigger chicken, an hour. So it's only actually simmering for as it comes up to a heat. You take the chicken, you let it cool until you can handle it, and then you take all the meat off and you put the carcass back in. And if you need to, if you're tired, you just cook it all night on a really low flame. And then you have nice, fresh, poached chicken for dinner. And then with the with what's left over, you can make a risotto. You can make a pasta dish. You can make a chicken salad. Depending on how big your family is, you've got two, three, maybe even four nights of chicken meat. But you also have this fabulous stock that you've cooked overnight. You drain it off. And at the same time you're doing all that, you can either skim off the chicken fat, which is really good and really healthy if it's a nice local chicken. You wash your greens, you slice them up. You can mix a lot of those greens together, and you cook those greens. You don't have to eat them that night, or you can. And then you have those greens all week. And you have the chicken stock. Maybe you got some potatoes. You make a potato soup. You put some greens and some cheese in. You got a soup that's going to last you two or three nights. You've got enough salad greens to last you through the week. And you can do something like that for $20, $25 maximum. What you have to do to shop at farmers markets, or what makes it a little more manageable and a little more automatic and intuitive, is you shop at your farmer's market first, and you shop without a list. And you get used to letting your eyes tell you what's happening. If it's there at the farmer's market, it's in season somewhere nearby. And if you're used to shopping, number one, from a list, and number two, from a supermarket, it takes a little while to get your sea legs at a farmer's market. But once you do, it becomes so much easier and so automatic and so intuitive. And there's also the reputation that farmers markets are more expensive, that food is more expensive. And it can seem that way on the surface. But again, once you get your sea legs, once it becomes automatic, once you understand the seasonal flow of things, I don't really feel that that's the case anymore. And there's some other things that markets, including the ones we're talking about tonight, some things that markets are doing to make them more accessible, including to low-income families.
Correct.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to talk about. That was sort of my little introduction to the, what's it called? EBT funds. It's got a couple of other names.
There's new names for, basically, it's food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's EBT, CalFresh, SNAP.
CalFresh, yes.
And the USDA realized as well that there's funds being cut for the people who are receiving those benefits. So what has been done is ways to bring in matching funds. So we were able to partner with the Petaluma Bounty, which is a part of Petaluma People Services, mm-hmm. and they are helping to facilitate a group that we're calling Farmers Market Life. And the acronym, gosh, I really got to get this one down. It's low income of food and economy, I'll get it. I'm sorry, Susie, if you're listening. basically, it's a program that will help bring matching dollars to people with CalFresh, SNAP, BBT, so that they can shop the farmer's market. And what we've found, we've been doing it at the vets for a while, and we do a dollar for dollar up to $20 at the vets, mm-hmm. because there is a large group in that vicinity that are utilizing CalFresh and mm-hmm. EBT. And we found that once we initiated that match, our EBT usage quadrupled.
Wow,
so
that's great.
All the markets that we operate, and then in addition to that, Sebastopol and Healdsburg mm-hmm. will be part of this group, and we're working on ways to bring the other markets in Sonoma.
I know Westside has gotten some funding to do EBT matching funds
right.
there
yes.
as
right.
well.
And also St. Joseph's has been very good to the veterans.
Oh, right,
market.
Yes, yeah. yes.
St. Joe's and also Sunrise Rotary and Santa Rosa have mm-hmm. both. Put money in. And the thing about the USDA grant is not, they don't make it easy. It's not like, here, have some money. We do have to show either in-kind matching or cash match. So we're
right.
still fundraising.
Uh-huh.
And that's another market manager job when you talk about what does a market manager do.
That's a new one.
Fundraising, sure.
Yeah, the fundraising aspect. And we're looking at other ways to help also our senior population. We're looking mm-hmm. for funding to fund the senior dollar program, which was...
I know Sebastopol does that.
Right. And actually, Paula Downing, who runs Sebastopol, mm-hmm. she had initiated that program along with the original group at the vets, and it's something that we adopted because we see the need, and we've been shouldering the economics of it, but we're reaching out to some other sources because we see the need is great, mm-hmm. and we see that we want to benefit our farmers and our local community, and making sure that there's some food equity and social equity going in. And that's what makes a farmer's market so special. It goes beyond just the food that you're buying. When you talk about, you know, let your senses lead you, and that's so true. We do that because we're busy all day long, and then we're like, oh God, we need food for the house. And sometimes we giggle. Jim and I have lived together, and so we'll giggle and like, you were at a market today. Why didn't you get any? Why don't we have any vegetables? So we are working really hard on making sure that we shop the market too. We're just always so busy while we're there.
I so understand that.
Mm. And so we'll come home with odd things. We're like, well, this is what was available at the end of the day, and we have to get creative with it, and it's fun. But the other part of it is talk to the farmer and talk to the vendors. Mm-hmm. They have great ideas mm-hmm. to what to do with their products.
Absolutely.
And they're the best source because they're growing it. They're growing it for a reason, and what they thought was great. Somebody bought fennel today and wanted some information on what do I do with this.
Interesting.
And I
have to put in a plug for myself as well on that one, because that's what I've been doing since for the Press Democrat since 1997, is writing my column Seasonal Pantry, and I try to tie it as closely to what is happening in the seasons right now as possible. And to sort of further that end, I started Eat This Now, which is a companion blog. So you can go to Eat This Now at the Press Democrat website, and you just put in fennel.
Right.
And what I'll do is every few months I'll get all of the links, hoping they work, I'll get all of the links into one blog post. So it's like, oh, it's fennel season, and you can go to that post, and there'll be links to like 15 different recipes or different columns for fennel. And I think that I'm trying to help people just keep things as seasonal as I possibly can.
Right. I think the other struggle people do have with the farmer's market is that it is seasonal. So right now we're still kind of waning. The citrus and the greens are present, and we're all bored of them. But you get creative, you know. You got to make something new and different.
Oh, and I can never get bored with citrus. I love citrus so much. I just practically cry when it's not citrus season.
True.
But there are so many things that you can do, and there are things. In fact, a real simple citrus thing that I discovered last year. When there's a lot of lemons, if somebody gives you a bushel of lemons, as someone did, and you can't use them all, don't let them go moldy. Take a plastic bag and put 25 lemons in a plastic bag and put it into the freezer. Just freeze the lemon whole. I think most people know you can juice them and freeze it in ice cubes, but you can also freeze whole lemons. And then say you're making a stew, a soup, a risotto, so many different things. You can grate half a lemon, a whole lemon, frozen. You just grate it, and you put it into whatever you're making. It adds in these layers of flavor. They're not bitter, and supposedly there's all these additional nutrients that are in the pith.
Oh,
so
nice.
I mean, there was for a while circulating, it cures cancer, it cures this, it cures that. You know what, I'm going to tell you, it tastes really good.
Eating healthy cures a lot of that.
Yeah, exactly. So you can do things like that. You've got a bunch of grapefruit. I mean, you can do that. You can make shrub, which is basically a fruit and a vinegar that's then strained. And it's something I've started doing. Like, somebody gave me like 3 or 4 flats of blueberries, and I froze them. Mm-hmm. But now I can take out a half gallon of frozen blueberries, pour red wine vinegar over it, put it in the refrigerator for 3 or 4 days, and then strain it. And, oh my gosh, if you have an inexpensive sparkling wine, mm-hmm. You want to have a cocktail, sparkling wine with this blueberry shrub, or one of the things I've been doing lately is just sparkling water with this blueberry shrub. There's almost no calories. It's so refreshing. And you can do that year-round with whatever fruit happens to be in season. I'll do it with strawberries soon. And then as soon as there's apricots, I'll do it with apricots. And it takes like 5 minutes of hands-on work, and you have something that'll last you for, you know, until the next fruit is falling off the tree.
And tomatoes as well, right? You can freeze whole tomatoes.
Oh, you can freeze. Yeah, you can easily freeze whole tomatoes and use them to make sauce.
Because by the time we hit September and October, there's
so many tomatoes.
There's so many, but then all of a sudden December's here and we have no more.
You can freeze them.
Sauce.
Yeah,
you can freeze them whole to make sauce or soup later. You can throw like a bunch of tomatoes in a roasting pan, put it in the oven, and cook them, and then cool it off and just pack it into freezer bags and do it that way. So you can cook them on the front end or on the back end. It's a great way to preserve tomatoes. You don't have to spend a couple days canning. You know, the freezer is your friend when, you know, there's when harvest is at hand.
Yeah, we always say we need a bigger freezer because we do. Like with strawberries, we always have an abundance of strawberries.
Well, the shrubs, I'm just getting my sea legs with shrubs. And with things like blueberries, strawberries, that sort of thing, when you have an abundance of them. With strawberries, you put them in a big jar and you pour your favorite vinegar over them. And, you know, all you really need to do is pull off the stem. If you want to smash them, you can smash them. You don't even have to. And then you add some sugar, you add some simple syrup if it's not sweet enough. With the blueberries that I did a few weeks ago, I didn't even add simple syrup because the blueberries themselves were already so sweet that they needed no additional sugar. And it's something, you know, a lot of people talk about. Well, there was the Rethink Your Drink campaign that the state of California was doing a while ago, and they still are. But they've lost a lot of funds, so it's not as widespread as it was. But that was drink flavored water instead of sodas. And they had people all over the place making their own flavored waters. And shrub is similar to that. It's just using vinegar to preserve and flavor the fruit. And then you add it to water. And, you know, if you find a fruit that kids love, then you have the kid not even asking you I don't have sodas in my house, but a lot of people do. But those drinks are really refreshing, and kids love them. And They're healthy.
Same with our adult beverages. We've been adding a lot of healthy healthy things. Mm-hmm. We the other day we made bee's knees, which is honey and lemon and gin. Real simple.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
It was
good.
So it's good. Yeah. It was so refreshing. Almost too refreshing.
Honey.
Like a honey syrup. So
honey syrup.
Water and honey, one part.
And then, but what was I'm forgetting?
Lemon,
lemon
and gin.
Yeah.
Very
and
simple.
The other thing you could do is put in a little fresh ginger in there.
Yeah. I think you could expand the palate on that hugely. But
yeah, that's really.
It was such a simple cocktail that we were kind of like, I don't know if I want honey in my.
It's a type of sour, but the Tanqueray, of course, gives it the floral tastes.
Yeah.
Can you tell we've had a hard week? We're ready. We're ready,
ready
for
a cocktail. What day do you have a day off during that?
Not right now. Yeah. We're at a 7-day work week right now. Yeah. So
you will at some point when your markets get sea legs, then do you hire a manager to do the week by week?
We have two assistant managers currently, and one will be managing some of the markets full force, but we are still looking for a couple other support staff.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do it all. We become
not at this point.
No.
12 market days. That's
we
a
recognize.
Lot.
The math just doesn't work out.
Sure.
Not if you still want a sane market manager and mm-hmm. We're also out there looking for the funding and also supporting the markets and marketing, and so there's so much more than just that simple job of market manager. Which, back to the EBT thing, May 30th, we're going to be having a comedy fundraiser at the Hatchery, which is owned by Becky and Bill Foss, who own the Kenwood restaurant, and they haven't made it into anything yet, but it's open, and
it is that in Petaluma, the Hatchery?
Pengrove, on Redwood. And so you'll be able to find all the information soon on crushersofcomedy.com.
Okay, and if you give me the information, I'll get it into my column.
But it's going to be fun because doing comedy and farmers markets are kind of intuitively comedic.
You know, there's I don't know if you've seen the meme that's going around Facebook right now, but it says, you know, the war on drugs increased drugs. The war on terror increased terror. How about we have a war on farmers markets?
Right.
I started noticing that yesterday. One thing I wanted to talk back to farmers markets and one of the jobs of the managers, and this seems to be a hot point to people who don't understand it, particularly people who want to be vendors, and that as soon as you talk about it, at least to me, it seems really intuitive. And it's something that I've always really admired Paula Downing for her expertise in this, is thinking about the balance of the market, about how you're not going to have 10 egg vendors.
Right.
Because then nobody makes money. So can we talk about how that aspect of your job, how you work that out?
Yeah, I mean, that is a crucial point. And sometimes you make a mistake. Sometimes you think, well, you know, I think we could do two of these, and then you find the whole thing backfires, mm-hmm. and then you could lose the one that you had in the beginning, and it can be really rough. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's happened to me in the last couple of years, maybe once or twice, and it's really, you don't forget that, mm-hmm. you know. And so you do got to be very careful with the balance. Sometimes you'll have somebody who's got, say, really avocados. You want avocados, but then they might be trickling in with all this citrus. And so you've got to weigh, well, do I need this avocado? Our customers need this avocado. But is this citrus going to upset the balance on the other end there, mm-hmm. for the other vendor? So it is something you really got to think about. With the vet, I pretty much laid low. I made a few moves. Some of them worked, some of them didn't. But I kind of just felt it out for a while, mm-hmm. before I realized what we're really doing here. And then sometimes you'll shrink down to a point and people will think, well, we need to just keep shrinking to go to our customer base. And then you got to turn it around completely differently and say, no, we've got to double everything, and mm-hmm. we got to give people a reason to come out here.
Mm-hmm.
And because if your farmer's market is small, I mean, I've seen huge amount of people just walk through, take a look, won't look at any of the individual vendors and just be like, eh, there's not enough here. I don't want to get trapped by
one
there's
person. Like a catwalk attitude. They walk through and make an abrupt turn and walk out and say, oh, nothing's here. No. What about the 20 vendors who are here?
Yeah, he's really great. Take a look.
Yeah. Do you really need 12 choices? I
feel like that has a lot to do with the people who have the shopping list in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And until, you know, we get more deeply rooted in the seasons, that shopping list isn't necessarily going to coincide with what they see. Mm. If you want apricots right now, you're not going to, or watermelon, you're not going to find them if you go to a farmer's market. Okay. And with the ubiquity of out-of-season produce in supermarkets everywhere, unless it's your job, or unless you work really close to the earth, you've likely forgotten what's in season when.
Mm. Right, and it's hugely beneficial for not only ourselves and our personal health and our local farmers, it's that carbon footprint, too. Mm-hmm. How long did it take to get from South America to, and what amount of consumption energy-wise to get that produce from South America to us? And so really seeing that.
Yeah. And plus how it tastes.
Yeah, then there's the taste.
Yeah, I mean, just on a simple, really, you know, compared to a factory farm where there's maybe mass spraying to clear your fields of the weeds, imagine paying one man to go down 50 feet pulling weeds by hand. I mean, you got to pay that person X amount of dollars to do that. And just think about the cost there.
Yeah, it's backbreaking work.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we benefit. You know, we're not doing eating stuff that's sprayed.
Right.
Yeah. And one of the other things, and, you know, at some point I want a chance to research this. I don't know as much about it as I should. But if you compare what the percentage of income, the percentage of annual income spent on food by the average American versus the average, say, European, we spend and expect to spend so much less on food. And from my initial research, less than almost anywhere else. I mean, I think in Italy, it's like 40% of a family's income goes for food.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much lower than that here. And we have, for a lot of reasons, we have a really unrealistic view of what food should cost.
Right.
And I don't know just how, the economy is just so challenging right now. How do we then say, well, yeah, but you should be spending more for your food anyway? That's a really hard thing.
It is hard. And I think it's something that we take for granted as a culture. I mean, we go, well, it grew out of the ground, but we don't look at it and see what that nurturing. We have a really awesome farmer that we love and adore, Tole Valley Farms, and he hand tills.
Oh, you know,
have you met him yet?
I haven't met him.
I know
him.
About him before.
I've left a few messages. He's probably just always out in the field, but I've been, and I know that are they still doing their CSA?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, because they have a sign at Ernie's Tin Bar.
Well,
that's his center of operations.
Well, I used to live the real Ernie, after whom that's named, who's passed on. Ernie used to pump my gas when I raised my girls out on Old Lakeville Road number 3. And Ernie was great. And I think this is Ernie's grandson that owns the farm.
So, yeah, Ernie and Tim hit it off, and Tim's out there on 5 acres doing this all himself, and he rotates the crops, and you can see the rotation, and he's the heart of Marinwood. If you want to meet Tim, you got to come to Marinwood Novato. He goes to Novato as well on Tuesday evenings, but he's been totally religious about coming to our Marinwood market and, you know, watching the ebb and flow of his stand. And, you know, when people come and say, well, I came for the kale, and he's like, I don't have any kale. And he's raising spinach, but he can't plant it because the ground is just too wet and where he's at, and it's just interesting and nice to meet somebody who is, you know, you really get the rhythm that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are not in that rhythm as a culture.
Yeah.
We need to learn that rhythm again. Mm-hmm. We've really pulled away from it with the industry that we've created around us, which is also really wonderful. I'm not bashing industry. So there just needs to be some sort of balance.
Yeah.
We need to all find it together.
Yeah.
I think that's what we're... why Jim and I, or myself, I'll speak for myself, why we're so in love with farmers markets, mm-hmm. is you see that balance coming into play. It's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm a really big fan, I'm not sure why, but I always have been a really big fan of delayed gratification. And when I was a little girl, I mean, I've always adored watermelon. And when I was a little girl, I knew right about when watermelon would appear and when it would be cheap enough that my mother would finally buy it. And I just loved anticipating the appearance of that watermelon. Mm-hmm. And then if you eat watermelon in December, first of all, the weather isn't, you know, why do you want watermelon? You know, you don't need to be cooled off. But it also doesn't taste very good in December because it's not been picked at the right moment.
Right.
It's been picked to travel. So I love anticipating my first BLT or whatever, my first cherries.
Yeah.
Love that. And when we have something all the time, I think we do get tired of it.
We just take it for granted. Mm-hmm. You know, you may still love it, but you don't understand the flavor of it. I just recently had this moment with strawberries. Over the years, there's so many strawberries at the market, and as soon as March hit, I was like, I am craving strawberries. Mm-hmm. Like, I've never craved strawberries before, and I've noticed that this year I've been really paying attention to the flavor of each berry grower in a way I haven't before. And each berry grower has, it's amazing that soil and how it's been nurtured changes the flavor of each.
Absolutely.
Sonoma Swamp Blues right now. His or hers are amazing.
Yeah, and the ones on Highway 12.
Right. I just tasted the one that blew my mind today in Renner Park was Stony Point Strawberries.
Oh, I don't know. I haven't had theirs.
We've been driving past their place. You can see them off the freeway.
Yeah, I know where they are.
And I was so excited and elated when she called us because we're like, I've been driving past your place and I've been wanting to knock on your door, but have been shy about embarrassing myself. Because I'm such a big fan of farmers, and I finally, they were so sweet and melt in your mouth goodness, and I was in love.
Now you're making me want to go have some strawberries for dinner. And on that note, we are out of time here on Mouthful. So our guests have been Kelly Smith and Jim Fenton. That S isn't supposed to be there. Slap my face. I have gone back and put it into things because somewhere it's like, oh no, I left the S out. I will correct that mistake. Agricultural Community Events is the umbrella organization. And to find your website?
CommunityFarmersMarkets.com.
CommunityFarmersMarkets.com. Next week on Mouthful, we are going to take a look at the fluoride issue. Fluoride in our water, what does it mean for farmers? What does it mean for people who, such as, say, brewers who rely on water? How does it change the chemistry of what's being done? And what does fluoride mean in water during a drought? So that is next week on Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming in the North Bay and beyond. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. Have a great week, and meet me back here at 6 o'clock next Sunday.
Grapes are covering the grassland. They're buying up for family farms. Selling out. Who can blame them? Wine's a cash crop growing strong. And in the fields of Pendle Valley, buildings sprout up like new sown seeds. Now they call it Telecom Central, 'cause this is what consumers need. All of the earth.
Well, they got pictures in the museum of local color that used to